flash car cruises by. Good evening. You're listening to A Question of Balance on 2SER 107.3 FM. And I'm Ruby Vincent. Dr. Arthur White, president of the New South Wales Frog and Tadpole Study Group, returns in to update us on a few of our long-running sagas that we've looked at over sometimes more than 10 years.
Well, I think it's probably time I told you what's happening with that dreaded frog disease, chytrid.
Yes, because it was like the end of frogs, the way things went on.
Well, it hasn't been good, but a lot has happened, particularly in the last 10 years or so. So our understanding of chytrid and how it affects frogs has improved a lot. And it has taken a long time for the Australian community to actually become mobilised now to start putting together coordinated approaches to try and protect frog communities from chytrid. So I thought what I would do is give you some of the newer findings that have come out about chytrid and then get into what the communities, the different communities are now doing to try and respond to the chytrid challenge. I have talked about chytrid a number of times on this program, and chytrid is a highly infectious disease that only affects amphibians. It's caused by a single-celled fungus, and this fungus basically penetrates the skin of frogs and tadpoles, consumes some of the underlying proteins, eventually kills the frogs and tadpoles in process. It is a highly infectious disease. It can be spread by anything that's wet, so that includes mud on the bottom of cars or just simply having wet hands and, you know, handling, for instance, one frog and then picking up and touching another one would be quite sufficient way to do it. It was discovered very early on that chytrid could be spread most effectively by humans. In fact, humans appeared to be the main vector for spreading the chytrid organism between frog populations. And so the way particularly that people who work on frogs like myself handle frogs and how we move and enter wetlands and so on has had to change dramatically. So basically there are a number of sterilization processes that have to go on with our equipment, with our gear, with our cars, all that sort of stuff before we can actually do the sorts of work that we've been doing for years gone by. But it's all about trying to limit the spread of chytrid. There's been a lot of genetic work done on chytrid in recent years, and that's turned up some very interesting findings. The first thing is that a form of chytrid has been in Australia for at least 10,000 years.
There's some interesting work done by Lee Berger that's come out of James Cook University. Lee was the first person to actually demonstrate that the chytrid pathogen was the cause of all of these disease problems that we had in Australia. And, of course, she was the first one to demonstrate that that chytrid organism, in fact, was worldwide. She's quite an icon, if you like, in Australian frog history. Now, there was some speculation, because chytrid and its effects on frog diseases is something that really only happened in the late 1970s through the 1980s, 1990s. That's when the big damage was done worldwide.
It was across the globe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we tended to just worry about what was happening in our backyard, but unfortunately it was global.
So it just suddenly sprang up.
Yeah, and so a lot of people said, oh, well, clearly there's been a mutation and this is a new mutation and that's what we're seeing. We're just seeing this new pathogen on the horizon. Lee was troubled by that notion for a long time. Chytrid, as a group of organisms, have been around for an awfully long time. You know, in the back of her mind, she's thinking, well, okay, they're everywhere. They're in soil. They're present the integuments of an awful lot of different sorts of insects. Humans carry a kind of chytrid around on us because we have keratin on our body, and that's what the chytrid organism can. So Lee wondered whether it was possible to actually go backwards in time to see if you could test that notion. Is this a recent mutation that's given rise to the frog chytrid organism, or is there something else actually going on? And is there a different story that we haven't tweaked to in play? So what she started to do was to look at initially older preserved samples of frogs from different museum collections, initially in Australia and then overseas, predating the 1970s and 1980s, to see whether they had chytrid or not. And yes, chytrid was present in some frogs.
The same chytrid?
The same chytrid, but the frogs were not showing the disease. So she knows straight away, this is not a recent mutation. In fact, it's been around for a while. She then looked at the differences in the genetic composition of the modern chytrid organism that causes the frog disease, as opposed to the chytrid organisms that she was looking at in some of these older specimens. When she looked at the genetic differences between the two, she could then work backwards, do a mathematical calculation backwards, to how long ago did these two split. In other words, she could estimate then when the actual mutation took place. Now, she came to a value, the minimum time was at least 1,000 years ago, the maximum was at least 24,000 years ago. So as I say, there's a fair bit of leeway, but you can see we're still talking about a minimum of 1,000 years ago this happened.
Definitely more than 40 years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the question is, well, why didn't it result in frog deaths? There's no suggestion anywhere that, in fact, it actually resulted in massive frog deaths. So what happened in the 1960s and 70s and so on to actually precipitate what we now see as the big frog global decline? She went back and started to look more closely to see if she could work out patterns of the arrivals of the version of chytrid that causes the frog chytrid disease. What she found was that there are distinct episodes of the arrival of this modified form of chytrid coming into, in particular in Australia, which of course is where she could get her best data from. What's been happening is that when the modified frog chytrid disease first arrived in Australia, its virulency, I shouldn't say wasn't high, but it wasn't having a profound effect on the frogs. The only time that it starts to have a profound effect is when you get multiple exposures, when you get repeated infection after infection after infection after infection. Now, that didn't happen when the organism first evolved.
No matter how big or small the occasion, Crust Pyrmont is your go-to pizza store in the Sydney CBD for office catering. Crust Pyrmont can deliver from 1 to 150 pizzas per order using the best equipment to make sure your gourmet pizzas are delivered fresh, hot and on time. Choose between ordering online through the Crust Pizza app or simply call the store on 9566 1933. Crust Pizza Pyrmont proudly sponsors 2SER 107.3. Don't miss your chance to see the final episode of Just Words, recorded live at 107 Projects in Redfern on Thursday, May 18, from 7pm. 2SER is really excited to announce that Jeremy Jones from the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council will be joining us on the night as a live guest to debate the merits of 18C. Tickets are selling fast, so don't miss out. Buy yours today, and when you arrive on the night, you'll also go in a lucky door prize to win Audio-Technica headphones. Just head to the 2SER website, 2SER.com.
Now, hang on, I'm a bit lost here. Mm-hmm. You said that we had this new version for maybe 1,000 years.
Correct.
I'm having problems about why we might suddenly be having multiple.
The answer is globalisation. It's purely and simply that more organisms are being shipped from place to place to place to place. And what it's doing is that you are refreshing the infection. You are refreshing the infection every time that you do it. So the problem for us, and it's if you like, it's a global problem now, is that because we don't have any way of effectively sterilising everything each time that they cross international boundaries, people coming, you know, travelling by plane, by ship, containers coming from country A, country B, all that we're doing is simply bringing in new waves, fresh lots, if you like, of infective agents. And that includes repeatedly bringing in chytrid. Lee's argument is that the 70s and the 80s just simply is the result of the technological change that's gone on in human society with the advent of true globalisation, with the advent of, if you like, any part of the planet no longer being isolated from any other part of the planet. As far as Australia's concerned is, it's meant that chytrid has now been arriving from multiple venues constantly, and some of these chytrids have minor variations in them. It is very, very difficult for any organism then to set up a defence mechanism against one particular pathogen if all of a sudden you get another one with a minor variant and then another one with a minor variant and then another one with a minor variant. The result is death.
it's like we get a different version of the flu coming in every year.
Yep.
We may be resistant to one from X years ago, but the next year we're not going to be as resistant.
You get a modified version.
Okay, so it's a slightly different
version.
That's right.
And consider if you get 10 or 20 versions hit you all at once.
And that could occur.
It does occur.
So it's not a sequential thing. It could be a smorgasbord.
It turns out that the chytrid organism is a relatively common sort of fungus that occurs in soil, but it's normally benign. What's happened in recent years is that some new strains of chytrid have emerged, and the geneticists have been trying to find out, well, what caused these new strains to all of a sudden appear? And their answer was the new strains of chytrid have all been generated as a result of greater travel from country to country by people. And what it means is that as people have travelled, you know, particularly with the advent of supersonic airplanes, people are able to travel from one continent to the other in a relatively short period of time. They can have sweaty hands during that entire trip. If they've touched soil or anything like that, or even plant tissue, they may well be transporting the chytrid organism across. And the bombardment of all of these different sorts of strains of chytrid organism has eventually resulted in the merging of some of these strains to produce one that attacks frogs. And so it's come about purely and simply because of the greater mobility now of chytrid across the globe, because people are now so much more mobile. So we carry chytrid, unfortunately, and what we've done is we've now mixed chytrid DNA from different continents all over the place, and unfortunately we've come up with this really quite nasty version that causes the frog chytrid disease. Once we've realised that's what's happened, we have to also acknowledge that people are going to continue to move around the continent. They're still going to continue to bring in new versions of chytrid all the time, and therefore other weird types of chytrid are likely to be generated in the near future. So, you know, these recent outbreaks of chytrid that we've seen from the 1970s onwards are just the beginning of something that's going to become a lot more common. The geneticists, therefore, looking at ways of detecting the presence of chytrid on people and trying to look at sensible ways of maybe trying to sterilise aircraft, sterilise people on airplanes, that sort of thing. But it would have to be an easy process, one that's not going to slow up the movement of people through airports. And there's a major research thrust going on in that direction. For the frogs in Australia, that, you know, we have chytrid, we've had the potent form of chytrid in this country since the early 1970s, which is when the first, you know, major frog deaths were reported. At this stage, it appears that chytrid has claimed six species. In other words, we have six species that have gone to extinction in Australia as a result of chytrid. And we have about another 40-something that are at risk. And we also have frogs, by the way, that are at risk from other factors. And the related factor, the strongest related factor, of course, is climate change, because the chytrid organism is highly sensitive to temperature and it's highly sensitive to humidity. And some of the climate change models that are looking at, for instance, changes in rainfall patterns and changes in summer temperature maximums and stuff across different parts of Australia, of course, then change the landscape for chytrid, where it can become well established in other areas where it, perhaps, in fact, it mightn't be so well established at all. So there's this massive campaign that's underway to try and look at the long-term strategy in dealing with chytrid. What has been interesting is that we now have a number of ways of treating frogs that have chytrid in relatively mild doses. So for captive animals, we now can treat animals with chytrid and they will recover. For frogs in the wild that have chytrid, the story is not so good. It's a lot harder to deal with infected animals in the wild, but there are trials underway to see if it's possible to actually set up disinfecting stations for frogs in the wild. And this is actually being done at the moment on Kooragang Island in Newcastle. This is a project that I'm involved in. where we're using wild population of green and golden bell frogs, so in other words, a species that we know that's highly susceptible to chytrid. And what we're doing is we're setting up, this may sound strange, but we're setting up salting stations across the habitat area for the frogs, because one of the things, fortunately, that the chytrid organism doesn't like is salt. So what we're doing is setting up little salting areas where hopefully frogs will periodically pass through it, disinfect themselves, and still be able to survive in areas where chytrid is rampant. So this is a trial that's underway. Early results indicate that this may work, but where you locate your salt baths and how many you put in and all that sort of stuff, we're still trying to get the details absolutely right on that one. But it looks like we have a way of controlling chytrid at some smaller local level. On a state level or a national level, no, we don't have a way of dealing with that.
A lot of people who've been injured in accidents don't get legal advice about compensation because they're afraid of what it will cost. But the truth is, it doesn't need to cost you anything. A specialist injury lawyer could actually fund your case for you. Law Partners is Australia's largest specialist personal injury firm, and it costs nothing to call their local office to get some advice. Call Law Partners on 133 529. Or visit lawpartners.com.au.
Two SER sponsors.
I guess I'll have to change my plan.
On May 27, you may well have to change your plans if you don't want to miss the 2SER Bob Dylan Birthday Marathon. 2SER's celebration of all things Bob will go for 8 hours and feature news, reviews, interviews, the Bob Dylan quiz, and all the Bob songs that fit, starting at 8 p.m. and going through till 4 in the morning. The Bob Dylan Birthday Marathon on 2SER, May 27, from 8 p.m. 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music, and Bob.
It's a hard rain's gonna fall.
There was a major research publication came out in December of 2016, and this paper looked at management priorities for chytrid in Australia, and the paper was actually titled Saving Frogs from Extinction. There were 15 authors, and these are all people who are currently involved in recovery programs for frogs that are under serious threat from chytrid or chytrid-related factors. Now, what these scientists did was they said, right, we've lost six species. We've got a number that are either critically endangered or endangered. Either way, they're in bad shape. In the next 10 years, are we likely to lose more species? In fact, they identified seven species of frogs that are likely to go in the next 10 years unless something major happens. So some of these are frogs that you would already know about, the northern and the southern corroboree frogs, you know, those brilliant yellow and black frogs that you get up in the high alpine area. The other thing that's happened is, which is related to climate change, is that a lot of the high country in the Kosciuszko Ranges now dries out considerably during the summer periods, whereas in not that many years gone by, it never used to. Because they dry out, they're now fire-prone areas. And what it means is that a lot of the sphagnum bogs and places like this in the high country that traditionally were always wet now dry out and get burnt. And, of course, for the little frogs that are totally dependent on them for survival, you're barbecued. You're gone. So they're losing habitat as a result of climate change. But the changes in climate are also increasing the effectiveness of chytrid in those areas as well. And then you add on to it a further complication that pigs are also rife in the high country, and they love to dig into these, you know, peaty bogs as well, so which also further destroys habitat. So in the case of the southern corroboree frog, the species is in dire straits. However, the responses are now being made. So, for instance, there is a captive colony of southern corroboree frogs at Taronga Zoo in Sydney. There is another captive colony of them at the Amphibian Research Centre. And there is a further captive colony at Healesville Zoo in Victoria. And what's happening with these captive colonies, they're serving two purposes. One is, obviously, there will be a secure population somewhere should they die out in the wild. But more importantly, the breeding capacities of these frogs are being studied and refined. And now they are breeding animals up with the intention of release back into the wild. But there's no point putting, you know, southern corroboree frogs back into the wild if all that's going to happen is that they'll die because of exposure to chytrid. So what's happening is that there's a joint project going on between the National Parks and Wildlife Service and Taronga Zoo and Melbourne Zoo to create a series of chytrid-free enclosures within Kosciuszko National Park. And into these chytrid-free enclosures, eggs of the southern corroboree frog are being introduced. They have been introduced. And what's happening now is that the studies are on watching, first of all, those eggs hatch and develop and the little corroboree frogs come out, just trying to get survival data on them and what's the capacity to extend these chytrid-free enclosures across suitable areas in Kosciuszko as a way of retaining the species in the wild. It's early days yet. The initial results are encouraging, but the response to fighting chytrid and not just simply letting species go to extinction is underway. For the northern corroboree frog, which is a similar-looking species, the response has been fairly similar. So there is a captive colony for the southern corroboree frog now in the Amphibian Research Centre, and that program planned. For some of the other frogs that are in trouble, there are two species of tinking frogs. So these are little mountain frogs that occur on high isolated peaks in very isolated rainforest pockets. So what the scientists are saying is, you know, there are big problems. Chytrid is still a massive issue in Australia. If we do nothing, then yes, we are going to lose species. This is where we're up to. These are the sorts of programs that have been initiated to try and protect some of these frogs. But basically, it needs a big injection of funding in it now. Because if you're going to save some of these frogs, you're on the critical time. A lot of these programs that are being undertaken by the zoos or by the universities are being done on very much on shoestring budgets. And in some cases, I know with, for instance, with the Amphibian Research Centre and that, you know, they do fundraising activities all the time, you know, where they have chook raffles and trivia nights and all sorts of things just to try and raise money to pay for the costs of holding some of these animals that are, you know, just virtually doomed in the wild.
What about cane toads? Are they susceptible to chytrid?
Cane toads, yes, there's been a bit of work done on cane toads. Cane toads, they don't actually die from chytrid, but they are wonderful spreaders of chytrid. So part of the research into the genetics and the susceptibility of frogs to chytrid has been looking at some of these animals that seem to be able to tolerate chytrid without showing any of the ill effects, and with the hope of maybe then trying to find a way of increasing the resistance of the native frogs to chytrid. Now, that's where a lot of the genetic research is to be aimed in the future, or it's actually started in the last 6 months, because the processes that I've just talked about, you know, the captive breeding colonies and the controlled reintroductions and that, can only be done on a very small scale. If you want to protect frogs in the wild, you have to have a mechanism where essentially they can protect themselves. And the best way to do that is for them to be genetically resistant to chytrid. So if we can come up with that method, then chytrid can stay here for all it likes, but our frogs hopefully will survive. But all of that will take money. And so the scientists were saying it's really time for the government to start getting serious about contributing to these projects rather than just simply leaving it to the goodwill of institutions like the various zoos or some of the universities. A lot of the universities use the public members to do a lot of their monitoring survey work and so on. There's actually a lot of people involved in these various projects, but we just need the pollies to wake up to the fact that, you know, you can't just keep doing it on a shoestring all the time and expect to be successful.
One more question about the cane toads. They can be in a pond or a tank that's got chytrid in it, and you drop one of them in it, and it's quite happy. It doesn't.
Yes, that's right. It won't die, but the spores that it releases into the water will penetrate the skin of other frogs. The chytrid organism, when it gets on cane toad skin, will actually burrow into toad skin and will actually consume some of the proteins in toad skin, but it doesn't incapacitate the toad in any way. We want to know how the toad's immune response is preventing chytrid from spreading so much within the toad's body that it eventually starts to break down, you know, vital organs, which it does, which is what happens in other frogs.
I thought, we have a lot of keratin.
Yes, we do.
I think in our own. Do we react with chytrin too, or is it different?
Only in a minor way. If a person comes in contact with the chytrid organism, say with the frog chytrid organism, there will be minor consumption of keratin. So it might cause, for instance, a bit of, you know, you might end up with split ends in your hair, or you might notice a slight discoloration of your fingernails, but that's the extent of it. We're not sensitive to chytrid in the same way that a lot of the native frogs are, and that's what we're looking for. We're trying to find what that defensive barrier actually is. What stops chytrid from spreading in organisms like ourselves and cane toads, whereas other organisms, like many of the native frogs, it's able. There is that barrier doesn't appear to exist.
But not all of our native ones.
Oh, no. Some of our native frogs are actually resistant to chytrid, by the way, which is interesting. Some of our ground frogs seem to be able to withstand chytrid quite nicely in the same way that toads do. So what is it that they have? What is it the toads have? That's what we've got to find.
You know, you talk about it, you know, endless bombarding of our country with our overseas versions. Isn't this sort of like our response to influenza organisms every year when they come in from Europe and America and so on?
The flu is a good model when you talk about chytrid, because there you've got something that's spread across the globe. It's a common organism, the influenza virus, and it comes in many, many different forms. And often the only time it becomes a problem when some of these strains cross. And then you come up with a new version that nobody's got any resistance to, and all of a sudden epidemics break out.
And something happened some time ago for chytrid.
Yeah, it happened. It appeared to have happened in 1973, 1974 in southern Queensland. And that's what triggered off the major event in Australia, leading to the extinction of six frogs and all of these other frog species that we have now that are either listed as endangered or highly endangered.
It is so puzzling, isn't it?
It's not as big a puzzle as it was, say, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we didn't even know what the chytrid organism was. It hadn't even been identified. So we've actually come a long way. We know who the villain is. We know how to control the villain under certain circumstances. Now what we need to do is work out a way of making our wildlife more resilient to it. That's the trick.
The ironic thing is that when it came to cane toads, we realised if we can keep them out of an area, we're okay. When it comes to chytrid, because it's humans who are the ones
human
who are
spread.
Spreading it, we ain't going to be keeping them out of any area.
No, that's right. The rules are different, yeah. So, and that just makes it, for the scientists who are looking for ways of controlling it, of course, that just makes it all that more difficult.
But it would seem that if they can improve the extent to which new versions of chytrid are brought in on aeroplanes and overseas travel, maybe they will also be helpful in relation to epidemics like the influenza that come in and damage humans.
Quite correct. So that's right. It may be that chytrid control mechanisms will be coupled with human, you know, hygiene procedures that are adopted at airports and on shipping lines and all this sort of stuff.
Well, there you go. You see, Arthur, once you start getting big bucks like to do with humans, you might get somewhere, but not when it comes to frogs.
No, if it's just for frogs, that's right. It's back to chook raffles and
lamingtons. You forgot lamingtons.
That's all right.
Okay, thank you so much. That's
most
Dr.
welcome.
Arthur White with another update, not as exciting as the one in previous weeks that he gave us about cane toads in temperate regions in Australia, but certainly maybe on the up and up. Thank you, Arthur.
Sydney Film Festival is now on sale. There's over 350 screenings of 288 films from 62 countries over 12 days in 10 venues. From the magnificent State Theatre in the city to the Ritz Cinema in Randwick, there's bound to be a film